This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. God sent King Nebuchadnezzar a dream to reveal the future. Yet the king didn't know what it meant, so he wanted to search out the meaning. In the book of Daniel, chapter 2, we see how Daniel relied on God to reveal the meaning of the king's dream. Stories like this can make us yearn to know the future the way Daniel did. However, God wants us to learn to rely on Him for the unknown future. Today, Pastor Sam will finish a sermon titled, When Your Dreams Really Come True. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
Daniel, are you able? Can you do this? This is not the first time, by the way, that God has sent a king a troubling dream. And it's not the first time that he has used a captive slave to interpret that dream. You remember in the book of Genesis, chapter 41, God sends Pharaoh a dream about what will happen in the near future, 7 years to be exact. God sends Pharaoh a dream about what will happen to Egypt and to the surrounding kingdoms. And like Nebuchadnezzar, Pharaoh was deeply troubled by what he dreamed, and his counselors and his magicians could not interpret the dream. Unlike Nebuchadnezzar, Pharaoh remembered his dream. And unlike Nebuchadnezzar, Pharaoh actually told his counselors the dream. And they could not interpret it. And finally, one of them says, look, I know somebody that can. He's actually in one of your prisons. And out of that prison comes a young Hebrew slave. And he's told to clean up, to groom himself, and to present himself to Pharaoh. And God uses a son, a descendant of Abraham, to bless Pharaoh. Remember what God said to Abraham? Through you, I will bless the nations. Here is the most powerful nation on the planet at the time, and here is a descendant of Abraham who got to Egypt as a captive, as a slave, and he's in a prison, and God knew the right time, at the right time, in the fullness of that moment, when the right time came, that captive stood before Pharaoh and interpreted a dream that saved Egypt. And before it's all done, Joseph is standing right next to Pharaoh as the second most powerful man in the kingdom. Now, when you come to Daniel chapter 2, you have an even more powerful king than Pharaoh. Nebuchadnezzar got to the throne by defeating Egypt at the Battle of Carchemish in 605 BC. Here is a more powerful king than Egypt than Pharaoh. He has a more difficult dream. Either he can't remember the dream, or he's just not going to tell people the dream. And somebody like Joseph happens to be in his kingdom. There is another young captive that has been brought to Nebuchadnezzar's city, the city of Babylon. And you can read all about it in chapter 1. Every bit of it was ordained by God. God knew what he was up to when he got Daniel out of Jerusalem the way he did, and he got him to Babylon the way he did. And by the time we come to Daniel chapter 2, we are meeting a new Joseph. And this new Joseph is going to interpret a far greater dream with far greater implications than anything that God sent to Pharaoh. And the dream is so stunning and it is so troubling that it paralyzes, it terrifies, and it makes Nebuchadnezzar furious. And by the time we get to verse 26, he has explored all of the options, and no one has been able to give him the answer. And so when Daniel walks in the door, he has one question. And the question is, are you able to make known to me the dream and its interpretation? Now let me ask you a question. Who was the ultimate cause of Nebuchadnezzar's fear? And I'm going to say something that you may have to think about. Because we have texts in the Bible that say things like this. God has not given us a spirit of what? Fear. But sometimes in the provident wisdom of God, he sends things into our life that are designed by him to trouble us. And that's exactly what we see here. It is God who sent Nebuchadnezzar that dream. It is God who withheld the interpretation from him. And he is not doing this, as we noted earlier, he is not doing this to frustrate Nebuchadnezzar or to harm him. He is doing all of this to humble him. And so Nebuchadnezzar wants to know something. Daniel, I don't know how I feel about this dream yet, but I do know this, it terrifies me. We're going to find out why it terrified him so much in just a moment, but I have a question. Can you interpret the dream? Are you able? And Daniel has a stunning answer. Remember we talked about this when we were going through the first part of the chapter? Daniel says, no. But there is a God in heaven who can. And the God in heaven is a God who has both power and ability to do things that you and I cannot do. Now, here's my question. What qualified Daniel to give this king that wisdom? What was it that was true about Daniel that's also true about you that gave him access to the wisdom? Because in the text, he says, look, Nebuchadnezzar, this wisdom that you're looking for does not dwell with men. His counselors told him that, and they were right. So how in the world is Daniel qualified to receive wisdom? And the answer to that is in verse 21 of the text. Daniel says, God gives wisdom to the wise. So when we read about wise people in the book of Daniel, we're always reading about a certain kind of person. And it's not just talking about their mental capacity. When we're talking about a wise person in the book of Daniel, that wise person is always living in a category that is contrasted by people who are unwise or people who are foolish. And we're not talking about ability. We're not talking about capacity. We're not talking about skill. Nebuchadnezzar was one of the most skillful people on the planet. He was one of the most amazing builders. He was a military genius. So whatever's going on here between wise and foolish, it isn't about mental capacity. It is about moral standing. There was somebody in Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom who stood in right relationship to God. Daniel had something that almost nobody else in the kingdom that Nebuchadnezzar ruled. He was a person who feared Yahweh. He is a person who feared the Lord. Everybody else in Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom feared different gods. In fact, Daniel is named after Nebuchadnezzar's personal god and probably after the chief god in Babylon. When he was given a Babylonian name, he was given a name that would remind everybody that the reason people like Daniel had come to the kingdom was that Babylon's god and Nebuchadnezzar's personal god had given him might to bring people like this under captivity and to drag them to Babylon as trophies. So everybody in the kingdom of Babylon feared gods, but they feared different gods. Just like in Egypt, they feared the gods who controlled the Nile. Here in Babylon, they feared a different set of gods. But in the kingdom of Babylon, there was one man who feared the God of heaven. And when you feared the God of heaven and you worshiped him truly and you belonged to him wholly, that God of heaven gave you wisdom from above. And if you get nothing else in the book of Daniel, understand this, that the only wisdom that matters is wisdom from above, and the entrance requirement to that wisdom is not a college degree. The entrance to that wisdom is not going to Bible college. The entrance to that degree is not coming to church. The entrance to that degree is not downloading and listening to a pile of sermons. The entrance to that wisdom is not found in a notebook full of notes that you took. The entrance to that wisdom is this. You have to truly belong to the God who gives that wisdom. And you have to follow him faithfully. This is what James meant when he said, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God who gives to all liberally, but let him ask in what? Faith. There has to come a moment in your life if you want access to the kind of wisdom that God is giving Daniel where you have to submit to the demands of that God. And the first demand that he made of you was to believe what he told you to believe about his son. And so the question for you this morning, and for me truly, is if we want the wisdom that God gave to Daniel, it is accessible to us, but the entrance required to that requirement to that wisdom is that we belong to Daniel's God. And if you want to know how to belong to Daniel's God, here's where it starts. You have to humble yourself. By the end of chapter 2, this king is going to have a lot of information about God. He's going to have a lot of information about the future, and it is going to be very impressive to him. In fact, it is going to be so impressive that he's going to do something stunning at the end of the chapter. He's going to get off his throne, and he's going to get down on his knees, and he's going to put his face to the ground in front of this Hebrew captive, this young boy named Daniel. I don't know what went on in that throne room. I don't know who all was there. I don't know if the Chaldeans were present. I don't know if the magicians were present. I don't know if the king's guard was there. I don't know who was there. But I can't imagine how stunning it was when they saw the king arise from his throne, decked out in all of his royal attire, all of his majesty, all of his power, all of his glory, and come down from that throne and kneel down in front of this Hebrew slave. And not just kneel down, but put his face to the ground. And not just put his face to the ground, but command that offerings be made and that incense be offered at the feet of Daniel. What is going on? Surely Daniel is not receiving worship from this king. And that really isn't what's going on here. Nebuchadnezzar is recognizing the superiority of Daniel's God. And because there was no temple to that God in Babylon, and there was no image of that God anywhere in the world, Nebuchadnezzar did the only thing he could. He got on his knees before the representative of that God, and he paid homage to God at the feet of his representative. This is a stunning reminder that there's coming a day when everybody, not just Nebuchadnezzar, not just Pharaoh, everybody is going to present themselves at the feet of somebody, and we're going to kneel down and we're going to confess something. We are going to confess that he is indeed the Lord of Lords and the King of Kings. And the only one who knew that in the kingdom of Babylon were four young boys who had been forcibly dragged from their homes. And here they stand in front of a king who has burned their city and torn their temple down. And God wants to use them to bless this king. I want to say it again. In the vision that God has for Nebuchadnezzar, he wants to humble this man, not to harm him, but to bless him. And it's stunning to me that there is a descendant of Abraham standing in the courtroom of Babylon, in the throne room of King Nebuchadnezzar, and out of his mouth comes blessing for Nebuchadnezzar. Out of his mouth comes blessing to the nations. I mean, think about that. Centuries later, someone is going to stand on a mountain and he's going to look at a bunch of people who look just like Daniel, and he's going to say to them, all authority has been granted to me in heaven and on earth. All authority has been granted to me. And on the basis of the authority that has been granted to me, I am commissioning you. I am authorizing you. And what I'm authorizing you to do is to take the gospel of the kingdom. I want you to take the gospel of Messiah. I want you to take the gospel of redemption. I want you to take that gospel, and I am announcing it through you to the kingdoms of the world. It's your mission to go into the kingdoms of the world, like the kingdom of Babylon, like the kingdom of Persia, like the kingdom of Greece, like the kingdom of Rome, and like the kingdoms that exist in the world today. It's your job to go into those kingdoms and announce the fact that there is a King of Kings, and there is a Lord of Lords, and in the fullness of time, he has sent his Son to redeem people out of those kingdoms. In the fullness of time, he is using that Son to reunite everything to the place where it should be, like it was before the fall on earth and before the fall in heaven. Ephesians chapter 1, verses 9 and 10. And he is one day going to come, and all of the kingdoms of the world are going to be swept away. And his kingdom is going to be established. And when that kingdom is established, it will cover the whole earth. And it will never be left to another. It'll never be moved. You know, Nebuchadnezzar had a glorious kingdom. I mean, it was marvelous. In chapter 4, he's going to look around in his kingdom and he's going to see how beautiful it was, the hanging gardens that he had built, all the power of his architecture, all the brilliance of his mind, all the wealth at his disposal. He had the wealth of the nations. And 65 years later, gone. All of it in one night was left to another. And Darius the Mede comes in, and Cyrus the Great takes over. And for 200 years, there is a new kingdom that took over everything that Nebuchadnezzar built. All of this glory, all this majesty, all the stuff that he's worried about, the fear that he has in his heart, all of that 65 years later is gone. And then 208 years later, there is a young king from the country of Greece who takes an army and starts marching around the world. And by the time he's done, the kingdom of Persia has crumbled into dust. And then after that king came a mighty iron kingdom that crushed everything in its path. And for a number of centuries, it reigned as a united kingdom. And then the western part of that kingdom was destroyed in the 4th century, and the eastern part of that kingdom was destroyed in the 11th century AD. I mean, all of this Daniel saw. And here we are, thousands of years later, looking back on what was future in Daniel's day, and it is all gone. And God says to Nebuchadnezzar, I want to say something to you to humble you. I want to say something to you to bless you. I sent one of Abraham's descendants into your courtroom, into your throne room, not to harm you, but to bless you. I told Abraham, I made a covenant with him that through him I would bless the nations. And Nebuchadnezzar, I sent this young man who you captured by burning his city and tearing down his temple, the temple he worshiped in, and I sent him to you to bless you. I can't comprehend that kind of mercy. If you tore down my house and you burned my city and you destroyed my people and you put people like Daniel in bondage and you destroyed their families, the last thing I would want to do is bless you. And God said, I didn't just permit this. I ordained it. Nebuchadnezzar, I set up your kingdom, and it's going to last for as long as I ordain it to last, and then it's going to go down. But while it exists, I have a purpose. I want to bless you. But to bless you, I have to humble you. And you know, folks, that's true not just for King Nebuchadnezzar and the kingdom of Babylon. That's true for Sam Horn and the kingdom of me. And that's true for you and the kingdom of you. God looks at us and he ordains things in our life that are very, very difficult. Sometimes they are very, very, very painful. And he does it all because he wants to bless the nations. He wants to humble people in order to bless them. And he has to start with us. What is it that's going on in your life right now that is so difficult? What is it that has caused you so much grief and so much frustration that you almost wonder if it's worth following God? It's worth being faithful to God. What is it that God is doing in your life that you have begged him not to do? What is it that you've asked God to take away that he keeps allowing to remain? No matter how many times you pray, no matter how many times you beg God to take this thing out of your life, it's there. Or how many times has God brought something into your life and then taken it out that you wish he would have left? And all of this has caused you grief and agony and pain and frustration to the point that you've even wondered, is it even worth going on? And maybe all of this is because there's coming a day God wants you to put you in front of a man or a woman like Nebuchadnezzar so that you can bless them. Nebuchadnezzar bows and acknowledges God in chapter 2, but in chapter 4, by the end of chapter 4, he actually worships God. And I'll give you a little hint of where I stand. And this is my personal opinion, and let me step away from the pulpit because my personal opinions are not anything that you're obligated by. I have a little personal opinion about Nebuchadnezzar. I think we're going to see him in heaven. I think by the end of chapter 4, this man actually becomes a genuine follower of God. Nebuchadnezzar. The guy, I mean, honestly, go read the annals of the Babylonian Empire under him. It is atrocity after atrocity after atrocity. And God said to Daniel, are you willing to be captive? Are you willing to lose your family? Are you willing to go as a slave and spend the rest of your life in a kingdom that you are absolutely uncomfortable in so that Nebuchadnezzar can get to heaven? Except Daniel didn't know any of that. All he knew was that God had appointed to him a season of suffering that took him to a place he didn't want to be, standing before a man he didn't want to stand before, and God used Daniel to bless Nebuchadnezzar. I don't know what God's going to do in my life, and I don't know what God's going to do in your life, but if we listen to chapter 2, what we're going to find out is God is going to use all that he has appointed, including the things that are painful, not to harm us, but to bless us. So that like Daniel, we can be a blessing. We can mitigate the blessing of salvation to the nations around us. May God help us to do that. When we come back, we're going to look at the dream itself. But this is the heart of it, this great doxology. God has unmatched wisdom. He has unparalleled power, and he has amazing grace, and it is available to you.
Thank you, Pastor Sam. Today's speaker is Dr. Sam Horn. He's the pastor for preaching and vision at Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. If you live locally, come join one of our morning worship services at 9 or 10:45 a.m. every Sunday. You can find us online at pbcpowdersville.org. If you have any questions about today's message or about Palmetto Baptist Church, reach out to radio@pbcpowdersville.org. Grow in Grace is recorded by the audio team at PBC and produced by CJ Billieu. Join us again next time so together we can grow in grace.